making TV special.
Venice. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Don't wanna get stoned. Don't wanna get stoned. But I don't wanna not get stoned. I don't wanna not get stoned. Don't wanna get high. I don't wanna get high. But I don't wanna not get high. And I don't wanna not get stoned.
That was the Lemonheads, Style, going back to 94, I think. And if you go check out facebook.com/MediaMonarchy, you can see me hanging out with Evan Dando of the Lemonheads last weekend when they were in town here in Portland, so you can go gawk at that. But that's not why we're here. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, the site and the show. And it's June 19th, 2009, a little bit after 8 in the morning, coming in early to bust out the B-side of episode 127 of Media Monarchy for you. Recording live on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And we got a lot to go over. We got a couple things from last week I couldn't squeeze in, and we got a whole lot of new terrible things going down in your world. So we're going to start it off with the 618 News Purge. That's June 18th, and that's a big list of ugly headlines featuring such wonderful topics like geopolitics, Watergate burglars, media memes, murder and mayhem, but we're going to start it off with the latest in the drug war. First, by way of SOAW.org, Spanish site, Presente, School of America's generals charged in Colombia, running drugs. Two Colombian generals, but they were, of course, trained at Fort Benning in Georgia, otherwise known as the School of the Americas. Now it's changed its name. I can't remember what it is, but they can't change their spots. So these guys are just out doing exactly what they were trained to do. Run drugs, black market, weapons. Just another day in the empire. How about this one? By way of raw story, youth anti-drug counselor busted for, oh, wait for it, selling phony meth and ecstasy. So not only is he a horrible hypocrite selling drugs while he's trying to tell kids just say no, he's selling the shit, and it's not even any good. From the Washington Times, pot foes and proponents eye Michigan's marijuana law, one of the latest battleground states in the phony drug war. But let's have a positive drug story, where recently Melissa Etheridge, singer, songwriter, cancer survivor, says that pot restored her health.
President Obama smoked pot when he was young, he said. In fact, he's never tried to hide. Here's another fact. Each day, an estimated 6,000 Americans will try marijuana for the first time. It's the most common illicit drug in the United States, with nearly 15 million people using it at least once a month. But should marijuana be legalized? Let us know what you think. All this week, we're taking a close look at that deeply divisive issue in a series of eye-opening reports that may change your mind one way or the other. It's a special 360 investigation. We're calling America's High, the case for and against pot. And we begin with a growing fight over medical marijuana. As of right now, 13 states have laws that permit marijuana, also known as cannabis, to be taken for medical conditions. There's no prescription for cannabis. Instead, doctors issue a recommendation in these states. But is it safe? Is it effective? Does it actually work? Melissa Etheridge says it work for her. The Grammy award-winning singer songwriter turned to marijuana after she was diagnosed with breast cancer. In an interview, Etheridge tells me why she did it and how she believes it helped restore her health.
I'm actually grateful for my cancer diagnosis.
Grateful because it changed your life.
Changed my life, woke me up totally.
Melissa Etheridge's wake-up call came in October 2004 when she was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. She immediately underwent 2 surgeries to remove the tumor and lymph nodes, and then began what she calls the most painful experience of all, chemotherapy. What is the pain like?
It was just a general pain of your body dying, of all your cells dying. So your appetite's gone, and you're nauseous, and your hair is falling out, your skin, it's like death. And the only thing I could do is lay there. I can't, it hurt to, light hurt, sound hurt. I couldn't read anything. I just laid there.
Needing something to ease the pain, she didn't want to use Vicodin or other prescription pills. Could be addictive or come with side effects.
All of these things have side effects. So the steroids and the pain relief that they give you on that first day when you go into chemotherapy causes constipation. So they, well, here's a pill for the constipation, which will give you diarrhea, and you get huge side effects from all of this.
Etheridge decided to combat the pain of chemotherapy with medicinal marijuana. The first time he did it, it made a big difference.
Instantly, within a minute, relieves the nausea, relieves the pain, and all of a sudden I was normal. You don't take medicinal marijuana to get high.
So you weren't.
No, you don't get
high.
A high. No, it's not a high. It's a normal. And I could, all of a sudden, I could get out of bed. I could go see my kids. And it was amazing.
2 big thumbs up to Melissa Etheridge, giving not only the finger to Big Pharma, but being a proponent of medical marijuana. We've got the latest few updates on the still curious crash of Air France Flight 447. There are some photos, the latest clues in the crash of 447. That's from Time Magazine. And by way of the Associated Press, again, Air France jet sent message on rudder problem. But again, from the Associated Press, as well as Wikinews, as well as independent.co.uk, autopsies suggest Air France jet broke up in the sky. Aviation experts suggest Flight 447 broke up in midair, but still, if it broke up in the sky, we're left still with the question, why? A lot going on in the world at large. Again, We feel the turmoil close to home, but it's all around the world. So here's a scary list of geopolitics headlines. First from military.com, I'm sure by way of the Associated Press out of Alexandria, Virginia. Official indicted for giving secrets to China. We also have a Chinese sub colliding with an array towed by a U.S. destroyer. UN Security Council, of course, approved new expanded North Korea sanctions. That's from Fox News, and Obama calls for robust enforcement of said sanctions. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Gates is saying that North Korea missiles could hit the U.S. in 3 years. And from The Guardian, North Korea threatens merciless attack if it is provoked. And again, with stepping up these sanctions, there's talk about ships and interdiction. But we note, by way of Russia Today, that there's a great difference between tracking a North Korea ship and actually stopping and boarding it. Here's where it ratchets up. Here's where it gets a little scarier. I'm not sure if this originally sources to the Daily Mail, but North Korea, according to Japan, supposedly plans a July 4th, U.S. Independence Day, missile launch on Hawaii. As a show of force, and a show of strength, and a show of ability, I suppose. But that's not just from the Daily Mail. We've also got it from the Associated Press and the New York Times. Hawaii ready for North Korean attack. And again, Gates saying that the U.S. is fortifying Hawaii's defenses against North Korean arms. Independence Day. Again, from Fox News, U.S. military tracking North Korean ship suspected of proliferating missiles and nukes. That coming just right on the heels of the new sanctions and talking about interdiction. So they instantly are like, oh, there's one. A couple other things. European Union leaders reassure the Irish in order to revive what is called the Lisbon Treaty. We've noted, of course, Ireland time and time again votes down what's called the Lisbon Treaty, what is basically their assimilation into the European Union. And finally, on the geopolitical tip, the Brazilian president, Lula da Silva, says that it's time for a new world order. Strange notes in the history mystery category. Watergate burglar and CIA operative Bernard Barker, dead at 92. Of course, by way of Alex Constantine. The Associated Press has the feds trying to block evidence being released in the Luis Posada case. Again, these go down the mystery, history, rabbit hole, CIA operatives, Latin America, coups, you know. There's new reports on the Zodiac Killer case. That's from the Contra Costa Times. We also have a nice long report, again, on the CIA, a blossoming 60-year-old killing machine. It's come out from The Guardian that a neo-Nazi leader was an MI6 agent. Germany's most notorious post-war neo-Nazi party was led by an intel agent working for the British, according to both published and unpublished German sources. The alleged agent, the late Adolf von Thaden, Thaden, came closer to anyone to giving the far-right real influence over post-war German politics. Under his leadership, the National Democratic Party, the NPD, made a string of impressive showings in regional elections in the late 60s, and there were widespread fears that it would gain representation in the federal parliament. Yet, according to a report earlier this year in the Cologne Daily, the Kölner Staatsanzeiger, the man dubbed the new Führer was working for British intelligence throughout the 4 years he led the National Democratic Party in Germany from 67 to 71. neo-Nazi leader was a British intelligent. I keep saying intelligent. It's kind of a misnomer. They're operatives. They're infiltrators. They're informants. The feds run the hate groups because they need to keep that hate going, to keep the agenda going. Inside jobs. And a strange little bit of action coming out of Chicago. This was first brought to my attention by my man Spencer Thayer at ChicagoCopWatch.org. Of course, we did an interview with Spencer a couple months back. But this happened first on June 9th, where a federal judge has dissolved restrictions linking the Chicago police to the Red Squads. What were the Red Squads? Those were the Chicago riot cops in 1968 who beat the shit out of people at the DNC. If you recall, last summer, remember there was talk about recreate 68. But then we find, by way of raw story, the 1968 Chicago riot cops set to celebrate mass beatings in the Riot of 68 reunion. So we got NBCChicago.com, raw story, as well as the Chicago Tribune. So it comes out that they've basically exonerated the Red Squad, now saying they're going to get back together, and Spencer Thayer of Chicago Cop Watch is involved in upcoming protests and demonstrations. So the moment they're about to step up demonstrations, they come out and say, hey, the Red Squads aren't illegal. A few media notes. Media and memes. How the spooks took over the news is from informationclearinghouse.info. A GPS maker, of course, TomTom, inked a deal with 20th Century Fox to use the voice of Homer Simpson. So you can hear him say goofy things with your TomTom GPS directions. And from MSNBC, the web, no surprise, or at least it shouldn't be a surprise, web beats TV and radio as preferred news source. And that's going to be a problem for them. The latest murder and mayhem, death and destruction headlines, more from Lauren Coleman of copycateffect.blogspot.com, now known as Twilight Language. But we won't get into that right now. He's got more on the suspicious death of David Carradine. How did they kill Bill? And more from Alex Constantine on the Carradine family seeking FBI help. From the Washington Times, bail increase meant to keep Scott Roeder, the Tiller killer, in jail. From Raw Story, lawyers and judges seemingly blame a murder on Halo 3. Fighting over a video game. Killing your friend. More from Alex Constantine. Something called Quanell X is seeking FBI help on a rash of mysterious deaths in Houston, Texas. U.S. hate crimes spike. More on that later. And that's from StraitsTimes.com. A sad story, but one that unfortunately encapsulates our situation. Indiana customers ignored the dead convenience store clerk while they shopped.
The video makes it clear it was broad daylight, and it appeared to be business as usual at this Gary convenience store, even after the clerk was shot to death. Police say witnesses stood by and did nothing. CBS2's Pamela Jones shows us critical clues that may help crack the case.
Police say one of the men bursting into the clerk's booth at this convenience store is about to commit murder. Watch the left side of the screen. You can see a man in red run up an aisle and kick in the door to the booth. Within seconds, the clerk is shot in the neck.
It was senseless.
But Commander Anthony Titus says what's even more senseless is the apparent inaction of bystanders, like the people, including a child, standing near the front door almost the whole time. Police ask that we conceal their identity. Police tell us several customers were walking around the store after the crime, but only one managed to call 911 for help. When you look at that video, what do you find most disturbing?
That the fact that people went in and out of the store didn't call the police. There's a man laying there. Nobody thinks to dial 911 or check to see if he's okay or anything.
Police want to talk to people who saw the four men at this mini-mart on 15th and Grant just before 5:20 p.m. Sunday. Investigators say two of them were dressed like this man, who's apparently holding a gun. The other two, including this man, had red shirts. Police think they were driving this red or burgundy compact car.
It's clear enough to the point that if you're familiar with that person, you'll be able to look at it and go, that's, you know, someone I know.
Investigators hope someone who sees this video will be able to help bring the family of 26-year-old Gurjeet Singh some closure, a man who was doing his job 1 minute and seconds later losing a fight for his life. In Gary, Pamela Jones, CBS 2 News.
The last bit of murder and mayhem you may have heard late yesterday. Transatlantic flight lands safely after the pilot died. That's from the agency French Press, as well as Raw Story. Last few bit of other random bits on this June 18th news purge. Our Earth is degenerate in these latter days. A thousands-year-old quote brought to the present by George Washington's blog. And this is interesting. Greg Palast, investigative journalist, gregpalast.com, author of Armed Madhouse and many other books, posted up on his website a note from Jason Alexander, a.k.a. George Costanza from Seinfeld. And it says, "You made me swallow the blue pill. I don't know whether to kiss you or curse you. You made me swallow the blue pill and there's no going back. Your amazing, mind-blowing, literate, and disturbingly funny account of what has happened in this country has left me dizzy. I'm grateful for the knowledge and understanding, but I'm crushed by the sheer weight of it all. Now having a greater understanding, I must begin to find ways to help it recover, if it can. Thanks for fucking up my life. With respect and gratitude, Jason Alexander, a.k.a. George of Seinfeld." Bookmarked it. By the time I posted it, Greg Palast pulled it from his page without an explanation, at least not that I've seen. But I put the link up for you, the cached article, still saved. Either Jason Alexander wrote him back and said, "What the fuck, man? I didn't want you to put that up on the page. Now everybody thinks I'm crazy." Or it was a hoax, and Palast didn't want to bring any more attention to getting tricked. Either way, it's interesting. And either way, if Jason Alexander is now going to do something with all this knowledge, he took the red pill. Which means he wants to learn more, he wants to take action, he wants to go down the rabbit hole. But if he really meant what he said, swallow the blue pill, it means, I don't want to know about this, leave me alone. Experts say Houston Dome may help the environment, as well as scientists debate shading the Earth as a climate fix. That's from NPR. That's Geoengineering the Stratosphere, brought to you by the Council on Foreign Relations, and now National Public Radio. And putting a big dome over Houston, again, just reminds me of the Simpsons movie, where after a man-made environmental disaster, they put a dome over Springfield. But our neighbors to the north have crews wary of radioactive wasp nests in Washington State's Hanford nuke cleanup. Radioactive wasp nests. We also have the Church of England attempting to broaden their appeal with songs by U2 and prayers for the CEOs of Google and Microsoft. Yes, that's from the Telegraph. I'm not sure if they're introducing Buddy Christ, but there you go. The last thing we have from the Looking Around blog on Time Magazine, Prince Charles in charge. The plot thickens, and indeed it does. And that's the ugly 618 news purge. But late last Friday, it was discovered by way of not only Infowars.com, but I can't find the other sources at the moment. But a UK court, has ordered Pete Doherty, musician and junkie, to get a medical implant for his drug addiction. Pete Doherty, singer for the English indie rock band Baby Shambles. He was also originally in the Libertines. He's been ordered to have a medical implant to prevent the use of drugs, according to, here it is, the Associated Press. Doherty appeared in a Stroud, Western England court where he entered a plea of guilty to heroin possession and driving without a license or insurance. It's not specified what sort of implant the British state demanded the rock singer receive. Naltrexone, with a link for you, an opioid receptor antagonist, is often used for heroin addicts. Some practitioners use a naltrexone implant placed in their lower abdomen. The implant has not been shown scientifically to be successful in curing the subject of their addiction. Implants are used for, quote, medication compliance reasons. There's one great anonymous quote, or rather comment, at the bottom of this post. It says, implanting humans with the ability to control an individual through chemistry is pure Orwell. Cruel and unusual punishment royale. Pete Doherty is a genius and a junkie. That's the reality. Drugs and artistic expression are intertwined for many of the great musicians, past and present, a la Lennon, Richard Cobain, and now Doherty. And don't get me started on the blues and jazz guys. When the state controls our bodies, junkie or not, freedom becomes nothing but an illusion. So thanks to whoever left that thoughtful comment. We're now going to hop over to foodworldorder.com. And the first post put up by my man Johnny, my helper monkey, on foodworldorder.com. By way of Danger Room, as well as a lot of research for you, by way of Alternet and Wikipedia and FBO.gov, FedBizOps. The Pentagon and pill-popping PTSD prevention. DARPA, our good friends, the mad scientists, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, is hosting a one-day information session to solicit proposals for enabling stress resistance among troops. They're hoping to harness advances in molecular biology, the science of cell-to-cell interaction, and neuroscience that would short-circuit the brain's stress response. The program's ultimate goal is quick fix stress mitigation using, quote, cognitive, behavioral, or pharmacological interventions that will prevent the deleterious effects of stress on the brain. Alternet, however, breaks it down in the article, Pentagon, Big Pharma, Drug Troops to Numb Them to Horrors of War. What the military have come up with has already been dubbed the morning after pill. M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. The morning after pill. Propranolol. P-R-O-P-R-A-N-A-L-O-L. Propranolol. If taken immediately following a traumatic event, can subdue a victim's stress response and so soften his or her perception of the memory. The Pentagon and pill-popping PTSD prevention. Doing a similar thing on foodworldorder.com, and again, it's just an ugly list of headlines. But maybe over here we're going to call it the Binge and Purge. First up on the list, what's on my food? Searchable database reveals toxicology of pesticide residue. That is from eatdrinkbetter.com. The National Animal Identification System has farmers and ranchers under attack. That's from Blacklisted News. We've got a trailer for the documentary Processed People coming up. That's from therealfoodchannel.com. Tap water worries have you buying bottled? Safeway loves you. It's a bottled water scam. UK study finds 12-fold increase in autism. That's from ecochildsplay.com. The Vatican, oh, bless them. They've endorsed Frankenfood for our security. That's on truthabouttrade.org. Doctors, of course, warn to avoid genetically modified food. That's from Cryptagon and Planet Save. GM crops are harmful to your health. Coke Zero dangerous? Venezuela says yes. Another totalitarian bill, H.R. 2749, control of the food supply, foodfreedom.wordpress.com, the new era of gene-based personalized medicine dawning, physorg.com, a couple reviews for the new documentary that's getting lots of press, and of course mentioning, along with it, Fast Food Nation, and of course the Omnivore's Dilemma, Food Inc., meet your new farmer, a hungry corporate giant. So reviews from Time and the New York Times. Holes in America's food safety net. More troubling news about BPA. A case study on fluoridation from the Times Online. And from the Independent, big surprise, diet foods encourage overeating. High fructose corn syrup and diabetes, what the experts say. That's on naturalnews.com. Private, not only military, but also the pharma industrial complex contractors, SAIC, Science Applications International. They got $13 million contract from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Farm Service Agency. And finally, from Bloomberg, as if all of that wasn't bad enough, Big Pharma's Eli Lilly sold a drug for dementia knowing it didn't help. Documented, released on Bloomberg mainstream. So those are some of the latest bits on foodworldorder.com, EnviroHealth, in the pharma agra complex. But now it's on to the war whores. Suicide, CIA secrecy, and sorry soldiers. It always pisses me off when a lot of the bad comes from my home state of West Virginia. And the biggest example in the last several years, Lindy England. She of the Abu Ghraib torture photos, such as holding a leash, and of course, the infamous Lindy England point with a cigarette dangling, gun in your hand. A recent interview with Lindy England on the Daily Mail has her saying and asking, why the hell should I feel sorry? Marine reservist pleads guilty to leaking intelligent documents. That's from the Los Angeles Times. Suicide rate among soldiers continues on a record pace. That's from CNN. And I just saw on the front of the Oregonian on my way down here this morning. They're also drinking a lot now, too. Or more than ever. Record pace. Again, SAIC awarded a contract, this time by the U.S. Joint Forces Command. But SpaceWar.com has more on Killer McChrystal, the new U.S. commander in Afghanistan. And in an article on Global Research, I believe some are quoted as calling him a psychopath. Stephen Lindman's article, Afghanistan's Operation Phoenix, is basically what is about to be launched there. Operation Phoenix, of course, being the indiscriminate killing operation in Vietnam. Audit finds that the U.S. overpaid Blackwater. Tens of millions of dollars. That was yours. Soldier's crime met with clemency or another murderer goes free. That's from the Chicago Tribune. Now, I should also note for the fair and balanced is that another guy is going to prison for murder in the War of Terror. And the last two notes, we've heard it before, just to beat it into your head, from the San Francisco Guardian and the San Jose Mercury News, feds want secrecy over alleged torture flights, and the Obama administration attempts to block the suit against the CIA. Slightly different stories, but it's the same story on and on. The previous criminal puppet regime has passed the football off to the present criminal puppet regime, and they're fighting all the same battles. It just has a nice smiley face on it now. Don't believe me? Tuesday, June 16th, 2009, from the Washington Post. House approves $106 billion bill to continue funding the wars in Afghan-Iraq. The House bill passed a $106 billion bill funding the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan through September as House Democrats backed Obama despite misgivings among the ranks about his strategy in Afghanistan. The 226-202 vote came after Obama and Geithner called some reluctant Democrats during the day, imploring them to back the bill, and Pelosi had strongly pressured her colleagues in a closed-door meeting to vote for the bill in a show of support for Obama. Let's continue funding the war machine as a partisan show of support. That even if they oppose his strategy of the Afghan surge. In the end, 221 Democrats voted for the bill, and only 32 opposed it. 32 Democrats opposed this. All but five Republicans opposed the bill after the White House inserted money to fund a line of credit for the International Monetary Fund, which the GOP, and they aren't the only ones, said amounted to a global bailout. Partisan politics, it's funny to watch them switch sides, but again, the agenda rolls forward. They just don't like it when their phony party is out of power. We're in the process of wrapping up the wars. The president needed our support, said Representative Anthony Weiner, Democrat, New York, who had earlier said he opposed the war funding but voted for it in the end, also saying, quote, but the substance still sucks. A couple of updates. Who opposed this bill? What Democrats opposed this bill? Well, it's more from the guy we heard from last week saying, brave, true things. The guy the Democrats should have nominated. Dennis Kucinich says another $106 billion and all I got was a lousy war. 1 week after declaring the United States cannot afford the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq financially or spiritually, Ohio's Democratic Representative Dennis Kucinich, a staunch anti-war crusader, took aim at Congress for not taking a more active role in any of the war on terror fronts, saying, quote, we're destroying our nation's moral and fiscal integrity with this war supplemental. Instead of ending the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, now by appropriating only enough money to bring our troops home, Congress abdicates its constitutional authority, defers to the president, and just asks for a report. That's right. All we're asking for is a report on when the president will end the war. There is also money for the IMF, presumably to bail out private European banks. Billions for the IMF so they can force low- and middle-income nations to cut jobs, wages, health care, and retirement security, just like corporate America does to our constituents. And there's money to incentivize the purchase of more cars, not necessarily from U.S. manufacturers, because a Buy American mandate was not allowed. Another $106 billion and all we get is a lousy war. Pretty soon, that's going to be about the only thing made in America. War. That's a quote from Dennis Kucinich. The last bit from Steve Watson, more on the global bailout provision. The House has passed a war funding bill, which is had tagged onto it a completely unrelated provision to hand over $5 billion to secure $108 billion in loans to the IMF. The chamber again voted 226 to 202 to forward the legislation to the Senate. I don't have the update here for you. I believe the Senate has already passed it, and it's on its way to Obama's desk. Links in there to Bloomberg, as well as a flashback, because they said they were going to do this. But let's just continue. From Steve Watson, the chamber voted 226 to 202 to forward the legislation to the Senate. The measure in the bill will also increase the U.S. member contribution to the IMF by $8 billion and authorize the United States to back the IMF's plan to sell 400 tons of gold. It was placed in the bill at the behest of the Obama administration in order to fulfill the president's pledge to the G20 that he made in April, the pledge to contribute toward a $500 billion boost for the IMF, which it says will go towards, quote, helping poor nations, end quote, during the economic downturn that they engineered and will now pose as your saviors. There have been a lot of updates in the realm of the truth and lies of 9/11. Some of these do tie in to the larger story that we're going to address in the big show, 128, coming up. But here we go. 9/11 updates, defamation, derangement, and KSM's stories. Now, I note at the top of this posting that now, more than ever, as we see another big attack on 9/11 truth, and it's not just that, it's dissenters in general, but it's important to remember, kids, that Obama's war of terror is still based on the previous puppet administration's lies about 9/11. We kick this off with a nice little flashback for you. Always noting the drills and the exercises. But by way of 9/11 blogger, as well as the fantastic complete 9/11 timeline on historycommons.org, 2 days before 9/11, military exercise simulated suicide hijack targeting New York. But from the Associated Press, accused 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed says, quote, I make up stories. Accused Al-Qaeda mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, complained that interrogators tortured lies out of him, though he proudly took credit for more than 24 other terror plots, according to newly released sections of government transcripts. Quote, I make up stories, Mohammed said at one point in his 2007 hearing at Guantanamo Bay. In broken English, he described an interrogation in which he was asked the location of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. And he said, quote, where is he? I don't know. Then he tortured me. Then I said, yes, he's in this area, or this is Al-Qaeda, which I don't know him. I say, no, they torture me. Yet at the same military tribunal hearing, Mohammed ticked off a list of 29 terror plots in which he took part. We, of course, always note the supposed Liberty Tower bombing. And he claimed he took part in that, but that happened after he was arrested, and that place didn't exist. Whoops. But that's the thing. He was tortured. He said whatever they wanted him to say, and other shit. Probably to both corroborate and to confuse. We noted Jesse Ventura recently said, you know, you give me a couple minutes alone with Dick Cheney and I'll have him admitting to the Sharon Tate murders. It's not true. So there you have the supposed mastermind of 9/11 saying, I make up stories. He ain't the only one, baby. But let's jump to our favorite left-wing gatekeepers at Air America, of course, named after the CIA's covert drug running in Vietnam. We noted, with some bit of jubilation recently, that 9/11 Commission member Richard Benveniste has a new book called The Emperor's New Clothes, where he bashes Bush. Oh, and I took that and was like, oh, yeah. But now we see on the break room from Air America, they've now brought in Benveniste to, of course, push back against 9/11 truth.
I have to assume that you're aware, as I am and as everybody who runs in these circles, of the 9/11 truth movement.
Well, I am aware of many people who have written and are on the lecture circuit who say that the planes did not strike the buildings. These were not commercial airliners. These were missiles.
World Trade Center 7 was a demolition job.
All I can say is I've not seen any credible support for that. I think people who have an intention to look objectively at the truth, and we did not deign to go into those facts as a commission, but there are websites, and I can get them to you, most notably from Popular Mechanics, which did a number of issues on the myths of 9/11. So the notion that the airplane fuel cannot melt steel. Okay, well, that's true. That kind of a fire doesn't melt steel, but it bends it. It weakens it. And so the support that was necessary to hold up the World Trade Center wasn't there. It was degraded and the building collapsed. Anybody suggesting that, who was there to plant these charges? Was it Al-Qaeda? Or this blood libel that it was Cheney and Bush?
That's the best he's got. Popular Mechanics debunked all that stuff. My book's about phony partisan politics. Popular Mechanics, Hearst Publishing, of course, the dictionary definition of yellow journalism. Benjamin Chertoff, cousin to Homeland Security's Michael Chertoff, one of the main editors on the piece. Of course, the TV specials, History Channel, being involved with Disney and the Council on Foreign Relations. Oh, they debunked all that. And he hasn't seen any credible information. Well, we've got some credible information for you in droves. You just don't want to see it. But you're going to get an earful of it here in just a few minutes. But first, we covered last week, of course, you know, Veniste just said blood libel there. Well, how about, you know, Glenn Beck saying 9/11 truthers will work with Al-Qaeda and we love James Von Brune, the Holocaust shooter. An East Coast 9/11 truth activist is preparing to file a defamation lawsuit against TV and radio personality Glenn Beck, the producers of the show, and the Fox News Channel. Specifically, Greg Hoover will be suing the above-described defendants in federal court for Beck's having repeatedly broadcast statements characterizing those who question the government's official version of the events on 9/11 as anarchists, terrorists, and as persons denying the Holocaust. This complaint will note that on October 22, 2007, Beck suggested that those identifying themselves as associated with the 9/11 truth movement are dangerous, anarchists, that deny the Holocaust and are, quote, the kind of group that Timothy McVeigh would come from. The suit will also note that during Beck's June 10th broadcast, Glenn Beck linked the murder of the Washington, D.C. Holocaust Museum guard with 9/11 truthers. Links in there for more on that from Washington's blog, from InfoWars, from 911blogger.com. There are fax campaigns and phone blitzes going on in regards to that. The amount of predictive programming and media that's out there right now demonizing dissenters is sometimes very clumsy, very ham-handed, but other times you can tell they've done their homework. And to the unsavvy boob tube gobbler, it's just smart enough to make them buy it. Law and Order, SVU, has pulled this off. To the average viewer, they probably gobble it all up. A recent episode features a deranged artist who, among other things, believes in 9/11 conspiracies.
Unless another board member knows where he is. Look, somebody named Gwendolyn of the Shadows wrote, "Good luck, PH. If you need anything, you know where to contact me."
So do I.
You know Gwendolyn?
From another side, JFK assassination stuff. She has some great pictures of the grassy knoll that I've shared with her.
So hop on and chat her up. See if she'll give us where Harrison went.
I'd rather talk to Gwen in person. I know where she logs onto the internet.
Farthest table from the door. Back to the wall.
Spot them before they spot you.
Gentlemen, been a long time.
It doesn't feel like it's seeing you.
You're not on the JFK dorm anymore. What have you been doing?
Officially, I'm retired. Mm-hmm. But between you and me, I'm working to expose the truth.
It's gotten bad, huh? Mm-hmm. Every day I see another one of their antennas going up. Cell towers. They think we're so stupid.
I hear they got to Peter Harrison.
You know Peter?
I met him last year in the village at a talk he was giving on Homeland Security's plans for our water supply.
Yeah. He knows too much. That's why they're after him.
This is a private conversation.
You've always made me feel safe, John.
Gwen, I really have to contact Peter.
Well, what makes you think I know where he is?
He trusts you. He told me that whenever he posts on PersecuteYou.com, you're one of the few people that really gets it.
He's running. They want to silence him, but we're not going to let that happen.
We?
Yeah. Peter has followers. So tell me why I need to find him.
I can't give you any details without putting you in danger. Trust me. You know me, Gwen. You know what we meant to each other.
There's an empty store at 88th and Broadway. Peter rents the basement. Turned it into a safe room with everything he needs.
Thank you.
Hey, John. I was going to tell you, I've been thinking of going back on my medication. So maybe we could be together again. Huh?
Goodbye, Gwen. I gotta go.
John, please don't leave me, John.
I gotta go.
Everything's going so good.
Crazy conspiracy theorists that are either on medication or need to go back on their medication. That's just one bit that I thought kind of crystallized the episode. Stealthy. And shameful work from Richard Belzer and Ice-T. Is it a warning? Is it predictive programming? Is it complete police state propaganda? I think we know. From Raw Story, Fitzgerald libel threat aimed at censoring key 9/11 tale. Author Peter Lance should be thanking Patrick Fitzgerald right now, even as the attorney's checks are being signed. If it were not for the U.S. attorney who famously prosecuted Scooter Libby, Cheney's former chief of staff, the re-release of Peter Lance's stunning tale of mishandled espionage leading up to the attacks of 9/11 might be overlooked. The former ABC News investigative reporter's book, Triple Cross, hit relatively few shelves in 2006 as a hardcover and left retail quietly, almost completely ignored. Now, with its paperback release looming, U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald is threatening to sue over the material which he calls defamatory and easily proven to be objectively false, some of which touches on little-known info relating to the attacks of 9/11. Because of the threat, the lawsuit threat, the reissue of Triple Cross received attention from the Washington Post, Huffington Post, Wall Street Journal, and the Associated Press, among others. That's the lesson of censorship, chided Peter Lance, speaking to Raw Story. How Bin Laden's master spy penetrated the CIA, the Green Berets, and the FBI. We could also call this I Led Three Lives, if you like. Oh, wait, that was Oswald, sorry. We noted Venista, you know, I haven't seen any credible information. How about 41 counterterrorism and intelligence agency veterans challenging the official 9/11 story? Those are just some of the latest. Of course, always check out Patriots Question 9/11. But from the Tribeca Trib, as well as DowntownExpress.com, faulty equipment stops Deutsche Bank work again. We still always note all the reconstruction and chaos still going on at Ground Zero, though it's now seemingly administrative and bureaucratic, but still sometimes destructive. For the second time in a week, faulty equipment has led to the shutdown of decontamination work on the former Deutsche Bank tower near the World Trade Center site. Responding to reports of smoke outside the building late Tuesday morning, June 9th, firefighters discovered a malfunction in part of the building's negative air pressure machinery, which produces a hermetic seal on the toxic portions of the tower. Crews were told to quit working on the building and did not return to work until the following morning. The smoke was the result of a piece of overheated equipment outside the building, according to Mike Murphy, spokesman for the tower's owners, the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation. Right now, we're trying to figure out exactly why that equipment wasn't working properly, Murphy said. Why is it important to note Deutsche Bank, the bank, and the building? Well, let's go to the entry on historycommons.org, and we have from October 12th, 1999... within the post about General Musharraf taking control of Pakistan. It's got lots of millions of dollars earned from heroin smuggling in a Deutsche Bank account. In 2000, a $250 million bank transfer suggests links between bin Laden, his family, and a Pakistani man, again, going through Deutsche Bank joint accounts, called Cambridge, a subsidiary of the Saudi bin Laden group. Oh, but that's not all. September 6th through the 10th, 2001, suspicious trading of put option contracts on American and United Airlines occur. It traced back to Buzzy Krongard, who then became executive director of the CIA, but at the time, he was the chairman of Alex Brown, which was owned by Deutsche Bank. Banksters, insider trading in the days and hours leading up to 9/11 on just the same airlines that happened to be involved in the attacks. September 14th, 2001, Deutsche Bank executive resigns, prompting speculations of 9/11 connection. That's from the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. June 3rd, 2002, results of 9/11-related insider trading inquiries are still unknown, from Businessline and Insight. And the last note on the History Commons complete 9/11 timeline on Deutsche Bank, October 2002, Deutsche Bank reports say Saddam Hussein's removal would benefit U.S. and British oil companies. Deutsche Bank published the report titled Baghdad Bazaar Big Oil in Iraq, which analyzes the large stakes that certain countries and oil companies have in the U.S.'s conflict with Iraq. Just some of the creepy connections from the bankster gangsters at Deutsche Bank. Again, we said Veniste and, you know, the Air America guys, they just haven't seen any credible information. Which either means they're stupid or willingly ignorant. But let's take the moment and take the time. This video was put up by my man James Corbett, CorbettReport.com, on his YouTube channel. And it's just a clip of Alex Jones recently. I don't play a whole lot of clips from him. He doesn't need my help. Also, don't want to be aligned and be a cult follower of whoever leader you like best. But the work is there, and you can judge it by the fruit. And this pretty much breaks it down. The smackdown of a 9/11 Kool-Aid drinker.
All right, let's go ahead and go to your calls. Who's been holding longest? Ed in Northwest Austin, you're on the air, sir. Welcome.
Yes, hi. I heard your interview with Willie Nelson a few weeks ago where he talked about 9/11. And so is your guys' theory that the federal government planted explosives in the Trade Center buildings before the plane struck them?
Yeah, Bill Christensen, who was CIA section chief in Europe, believes that. Bill Doyle, the head of the biggest 9/11 victims group, says the majority of the 9/11 families believe it's an inside job. We have Bob Baer, the movie Syriana's about, famous CIA commander, saying all the evidence points towards inside job. Did you know there's a whole bunch, over 200 declassified examples, where our government admits they staged terror attacks and blew up buildings in other countries to blame it on their enemies? I mean, first off, are you aware of that?
No, sir, I'm not. But why did the government do that?
Well, why did Hitler, and by the way, we always have the documents on this in Europe, 60-something years later, Marinus van der Lubbe, they grabbed a retarded, mentally ill person, thrown him out naked on the side of the street, and said that he'd firebomb the Reichstag. Hitler then used that to become dictator and pass anti-terror laws and start grabbing the homeschoolers, and that's who he started with. And
the position then that the government coordinated this with the people that did that on 9/11.
No, that's not to impose
less freedom on us. Is that your position?
Well, they have said that Al Qaeda attack us because they hate our freedoms, and then the government's done everything they can to take our freedoms. So it's true that Al-Qaeda attacked us to get our freedoms, and it's true that our government founded Al-Qaeda. Zbigniew Brzezinski just wrote another best-selling book where he brags in 79, 6 months before the Russians invaded, they created a code name Al-Qaeda, and that means the base of CIA operations in Central Asia, and then they launched Operation Cyclone. This is all declassified now, to attack Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and several other of the Russian satellites to get the Russians to invade. And then that whole thing was a large setup. I know they have a Tom Hanks movie that claims the CIA got involved in 85. But
you're flooding me with words here. I'm trying to stick.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm flooding you with facts, Bubba.
The people that piloted the planes, they coordinated that with the government who planted the explosives?
Well, who says that the official story that those guys supposedly piloted those planes? Whoever said that fairy tale was true or
wrong? Okay, you do not believe that.
Oh, no. I do not. Sir, it isn't that I don't believe. Okay? It isn't that I don't believe. I have the Associated Press. I have the San Jose Mercury News. I have the Pensacola News Journal. I have Newsweek. I have the Toronto Star. Did you know that I interviewed the two heads of the Saudi Arabian U.S. Embassy in Saudi Arabia in Riyadh, and I interviewed the head of the main U.S. Embassy, Mr. Springman, in Ottawa, Canada. I know those are words, but Canada's a place. And I interviewed him. That's the capital up there in Ottawa. It's very beautiful. And about a year before 9/11, these guys are coming back into the U.S. and they're flagged as top-level terrorists, and he's not giving them visas. And all of a sudden, he's the head of the embassy. He gets a call from the State Department saying, let him in, that's their cover. He says no. Then the deputy of Secretary of State calls him and says, they're not terrorists, they're CIA agents. The terror designation is their cover. Now, that was in the Canadian and British papers, and I thought, my goodness, I better call up and get that former heads of the embassies on the show. Okay, now you can say those are words. Your little story is you're going to talk real slow, like you're real smart and I'm real dumb, and you're going to go, okay, you think. See, first I explain our government admits they stage terror attacks and blame it on enemies to start wars. That's been declassified hundreds of times. I tried to give you examples of that. And then you said, why would our government do it? Same reason Hitler firebombed his own capital. To say, oh, look, we're under attack. I got to take all your rights and be your king. And you can't question me and my no-bid contracts to Heinrich Himmler and Hermann Göring and Jens Strom and the rest of them. Okay, so I'm answering your question. Government stage events, it's called problem, reaction, solution. Yeah, Gulf of Tonkin, I remember being called a conspiracy 35 years ago. That's now been totally declassified that was all staged. To get us into Vietnam, killed 58,000 Americans, over 1.5 million Vietnamese. The former Italian president, the former head of their intelligence agency, went public 2 months ago and said that everybody in intelligence knows the U.S. staged the attacks against itself, but not the U.S., the criminal elements. The number two in the Japanese parliament, the head of the second largest party, has been having public, month-long investigations, 30 minutes, an hour, live on television, every night in Japan. They're all glued. Former congressman went public on my show Friday saying he believes it's an inside job. That's up on prisonplanet.com and infowars.com. Andre von Bülow, the former Secretary of Defense of Germany, who's also the former head of intelligence before that, has gone public saying inside job. Number three in the Blair government, Michael Meacher, I flew to London to interview him, went public saying all the evidence says inside job. I mean, I can go on for like 10 hours here. Physicists, scientists, engineers, architects, the head structural engineer on the World Trade Centers, directly under the head architect, has gone public saying it's impossible for jet fuel. Underwriter Laboratories secretly did its own tests. It had underwritten the buildings, Tower 1, 2, and 7, and found that it had to be blown up, and then they weren't allowed to release that information. And when Kevin Ryan did, the head of that division, he got fired. Now listen, I got loaded phone lines. I can't spend all day with little children. 84% of Americans, major polls, believe the government's lying about it. Okay? So your ball game's over, buddy. We know crooks run the nation. So you can talk real slow and act real smart. Bush isn't a conservative. Barack Obama's evil. And you're a moron. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And that's how you do it. Last bit of 9/11 updates on the posting defamation, derangement, and KSM's stories. We've noted this before, but now it's been performed. They're here. The 9/11 hero dog has been cloned 5 times for a California couple by a California company. 2 stories from KTLA.com and The Guardian. Returning to History Commons and the complete 9/11 timeline, Kevin Fenton thankfully, helpfully publishes editions in a nice little paragraph form letting you know of the newest additions to the 9/11 timeline. Here they are as of June 16th on the 9/11 Commission and more. Some of the recently added entries go into more detail about the 9/11 Commission, which discovered the FAA was withholding documents from it in September 2003 and issued its first subpoena for them a month later. Soon after, the commission also subpoenaed the Pentagon, despite a last-ditch bid to avert it by the commission's vice chairman, Lee Hamilton, a good friend of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. In addition, Commissioner John Lehman repeatedly, told the White House of Saudi links to the 9/11 plotters, but the administration was uninterested. On the day of 9/11, fighters launched from Langley were given the wrong coordinates for Washington at about 9:40 a.m. Otis Air Force Base was ordered to launch all fighters at about 10:20 a.m., and we also have a security officer becoming trapped in Building 7 around 10 a.m. The very first entry in the timeline has changed, and is now for a 1968 advertisement showing an airliner striking one of the World Trade Center buildings, something that nearly happened in 1981. That would be a plane barely missing the TV mast. Finally, in the late 90s, Yemeni authorities saw Abu Hamza al-Masri, an informer for the British security services, as a terrorist leader in Yemen. Remember just a little bit ago, we heard that neo-Nazi leader was working for British intelligence. Here we have a terrorist leader actually being an intelligence agent. The last 9/11 update for you. Again, 9/11 families meeting with the current puppet administration and the new Attorney General Eric Holder. That's by way of the 9/11 listserv, a Google group I've been following lately. And I mentioned that Alex Jones' clip was edited and put together with added context by James Corbett of the Corbett Report. The latest episode, 90, Our Leaders Are Psychopaths. They walk among us. On the outside, they're just like you and me, but on the inside, they're unfeeling automatons who care only for themselves. They are the psychopaths, and they are in control of our governments, our corporations, our military, and all the positions of power. On episode 90, Corbett Report delves into political ponerology. P-O-N-E-R-O-L-O-G-Y. Political ponerology. Ponerology.com. It's a book and a website and a diagnosis of our politicians and a brief look into the larger picture. Ponerology is described by the authors themselves as the science of evil. And just let me throw out thanks to James Corbett for linking to Media Monarchy recently. Not only something we're going to get to later, but the aforementioned Pete Doherty getting court-ordered medical implant. So again, thanks to you guys. We all work together. We can all spread the word even more. Our last list of news on this B-side episode of 127 on MediaMonarchy.com, June 19th, 2009. Econo crash updates. California, class war, and a banking dictatorship. First headline from the Telegraph. U.S. cities may have to be bulldozed in order to survive. I have to kill you in order to save you. Global Research asking the question, how long can the dollar last as the world's reserve currency? From click2houston.com, an interesting story, and we're only going to see more of this. Florida mother secretly lives in a home that's for sale. A nice big old West Palm Beach mansion. Squatting. Coming soon to a blown-out ghost town near you. We mentioned last week the suspicious activity. There's more from Bloomberg. Japan probes report on the two seized with undeclared U.S. bonds. Judgment Day. Broken California faces shutdown at Schwarzenegger's hands. That's by way of whatreallyhappened.com, as well as a nice little clip from Arnold Hitler admiring Schwarzenegger, arnoldexposed.com. Remember in 2004 at the RNC reminding you not to be economic girly men, but the longer story on the collapse of California from the Times Online. Time magazine asking if the U.S. government can afford to let California fail. Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com talks about the financial bailout plan that keeps the zombie banks alive. Russia calls on the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to replace the dollar in our international trade. Shanghai Cooperation Organization, of course, being a sort of anti-NATO, where we see folks like Russia and China and Iran and many, many, many other observer countries aligning themselves against the West. Bernie Madoff. Billionaire Madoff. Tied to intelligence agencies. You notice a theme emerging here? This is by way of Russia Today. And when I saw the interview and who they were talking to, it was with Wayne Madsen. I was like, damn, that's like the third Russia Today clip I've seen with him. Wayne Madsen is now actually a contributor regularly to RussiaToday.com. Wayne Madsen, saw him speak here in Portland, got to meet him and talk to him. Author, of course, of How to Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day. And, of course, WayneMadsenReport.com. We also have a recently breaking note on the billionaire Alan Stanford being arrested or turning himself in. Another Ponzi schemer, bankster, gangster, and he's going to appear in federal court. I'm sure we'll have more on that later. But on this latest bailout round and the newest, quote-unquote, reforms, Obama reform officially establishes banking dictatorship. That's from Paul Joseph Watson. The Federal Reserve to gain power under the new plan. That's from the Washington Times. Fed to be given sweeping new powers. That's from Kurt Nimmo. By way of Cryptagon, we quote Obama saying, "This was a failure of the entire system. But the solution, of course, is to make the system bigger." It's what they do after every engineered event, whether it's 9/11 or the Econo crash. Oh, whoops, we just need more control. Credit Christopher Dodd, at least, for saying that giving the Fed more powers like awarding a son a bigger, faster car right after he crashed the family station wagon. Tiny Tim Geithner says that the Federal Reserve is the best positioned for a super regulator role. That would be the super regulator role in the new financial world order. Same thing, again and again. Banksters take control of economies, pump it up, blow it out, collect it, and you're fucked. Does that break it down for you pretty simply and crudely? The last few notes. Six Flags declares bankruptcy. MySpace lays off 30% of their staff. Eddie Bauer files for bankruptcy. And out of Australia, news.com.au, cash to become extinct as chips take off. Now, we've seen some reports saying, well, we can't go cashless yet because there's so many people. How are you going to do, you know, church bake sales and yard sales and that kind of thing? That's small potatoes to the banksters, gangsters who want a cashless control grid. New York home prices forecast to drop 40%. That's from Time Magazine. And the last grand finale here on the B-side, 127. I saw the article by way of the Washington Post. Video about Arlington hits close to home. The Arlington way just got a little funkier. Or maybe not. A new YouTube video makes gentle sport of Virginia's most liberal community as a wonky, nice but maybe too nice haven for Prius-driving, latte-sipping, crunchy granola-eating suburbanites. I think everyone's seen it by now. What do you want me to say? Said Chris Zimmerman, a member of the Arlington County Board. It's a hoot. You can quote me on that. As scenes of Ann Taylor and William Sonoma stores flash by, the video goofs on Arlington as a ghetto of brick sidewalks, book clubs, dog parks, overzealous meter maids, and guys running around in brown flip-flops. There is, as the video suggests, a Starbucks on every corner. The video, posted last Thursday, would be the 11th, on YouTube, posted by a McLean native who identifies himself as Remy, R-E-M-Y, goremy.com, has burned up email lists in the county and has tallied more than 65,000 views on YouTube, and it's, I believe, way more than that by now. It's 476,000+, as I come to you right now. The video is a parody of a parody, an homage to the lazy Sunday spoof rap by Andy Samberg of SNL that replaced Guns and Bling with Cupcakes and Chronicles of Narnia matinees. Dressed like a Capitol Hill aide, Remy wears a tie instead of gold chains and postures with a Swiffer sweeper instead of a gun as he jokes about a community known for good government, smart growth, amicable political discourse, and ubiquitous parking meters warning that all may park, all must pay. But it also gets Arlington as a place that is made, that has remade itself from a backlot of used car dealerships and subdivisions into an urban center with high-rises, ethnic restaurants, and clubs grouped around the metro. Cecile Remington, 31, who's lived in Arlington for 25 years, said the video is a spot-on parody of Arlington's yuppie culture. "I laughed out loud because it's true," said Remington, who handles marketing for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. But she also wonders whether the humor, filled with inside jokes about the desolate canyons of nighttime Rosalind and Metro's Orange Line, will have legs outside the area. Of course, not everyone gets the joke. "Fair viewers," wrote someone named Arlington Native, "do not be led astray by the attitude laid before you in this putrid and arrogant video. These moron carpetbaggers are not Arlingtonians. They are interlopers from afar who have come to infect our town. The real Arlington is a rich and wonderful place with a lifetime's worth of exploration and hidden delight." Remy could not be reached for comment, but a bio on his website said he attended Langley High School, of course Langley being the home of the Central Intelligence Agency. He attended Langley High School before going to college at Wheeling Jesuit University. Other videos on his site include 2% Milk, the McDonald's rap, Macaca Blues, which tees up the flap over Senate re-election campaign of George Allen. So it was brought to my attention by the Washington Post. Video about Arlington hits close to home. And I spread the word about it. I know my friends that are still on the East Coast on Facebook, they loved it. It's nice to have some satirical rap about suburban crap and class war. So that's how we're going to go out, my friends, on this B-side episode of 127 of MediaMonarchy.com, June 19th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. So much more to come on episode 128 of Media Monarchy, of course, with Operation Blackjack, Ardent Century terror drills here in Oregon, bizarre predictive programming, and just the general rising level of chaos in the world. It's Arlington, fool.
Yo, I just moved to a new hood.
New hood.
And it's straight up gangster.
That's right.
Wait, what? Let me show you around.
My town. People all around better know the deal. Let the people in this town all get over real. So when people tell me, Remy, where you calling from? I say a straight up thug town called Arlington. Yo, it's a real tough town. I'm packing heat and boat shoes. My crib's in a rough spot right next to the Whole Foods. Ducking gunfire daily. I check to see if one got me. But that's just life in the hood when I go and get my Pukkashi. But no, we never do drugs. Nah, cause that's not me. The only thing high up in here are my condo fees. Welcome to Arlington, the town that never fizzles. Boston, Roslyn, Courthouse, the Quizzle Dizzle. So many places to choose from, you're gonna like to pick. I'm in Courthouse so much, man, they call me Michael Vick. The girls in Roslyn all got money, yeah, they all could pay the bills. But that's all I'll film in Roslyn. I hate walking up these hills. And we kind of
kinda got them all. Yeah, you know you can't stop us. Got everything but nothing good, man. It's kinda like tapas. You just try to mess with us, I'll shoot you right in the foot, punk. Just don't come on Tuesday nights, that's when I meet with my book club. Okay, I don't really read. When I buy a book, it may be causing.
You read Salinger?
No, my kitchen table wobbles. Ducking down instinctively and gunshots were mired. Wait, never mind, someone's German car backfired. Oh, you think you're leaving alive? Yeah, you do, but I don't buy it. I'm gonna eliminate you like I did gluten from my diet. Come and see me in the alley, run, don't be what you wishing. I'm busting out my fighting moves like the fetal position. But first I need some cover, need some help, y'all, this way.
Cover? You need backup?
Nah, punk, it's for my duvet. Straight thug hood, getting mugged on the go-go. But mugging here is when a stranger comes and gives you cocoa. Got a lot of bad girls and a lot of tough dudes. Our school of hard knocks was written up in U.S. News. We got dudes in brown flip-flops. Dudes in brown flip-flops. Holy crap, why are these dudes wearing brown flip-flops?
The people all around better know the deal. That the people in this town are ghetto for real. So when people tell me, Remy, where you calling from? I say a straight-up thug town called Arlington.
5 p.m. I hit the gym, even if I'm feeling crabby. But first I walk my tiny dog with the little plastic baggie. Stretch in front of folks around me so they know that I'm invested. Press the button for the lobby, even if somebody pressed it. I go jogging at a reasonable pace. And when I get to intersections, man, I jog in place. Up and goes Jim, gonna give it my all, son.
So many dudes in here, they should call this Boston.
Rolling one deep so everybody can see us. Cruising down Wilson, rocking tens on my Prius. Get out my car, check my shoe and sock a minute. Stand right back up, I got 7 parking tickets. DC from the get-go, head to the metro.
You heading to Whitlow's?
Maybe, I guess so. Riding's never boring, I say it's never better than riding on an Orange Line train to Vienna. You better step back, punk, that's your final warning.
You gonna punch me?
Nah, son, the doors are closing. Hey, yo, what's with this delay? I can't wait for this. Why'd they pick today to do the track maintenance? Now we're stuck in the city. How we getting back, son?
We could take the Green Line.
So we're taking a taxi back to our gangster world, where the sidewalks are brick and the streets are curved. So if you think you got the cred and you think your toughness got me, come and see me in my town and we'll grab a cup of coffee at the Starbucks or 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 the Starbucks.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.